listening to Glass Processing, the official podcast of DVDverdict.com that has to do with, you know, gaming, gadgets, gear, contrarian bitching about consoles we hate, just generally acting like a bunch of elitist douchebag video game snobs because, hey, at heart, that's what we all are, isn't it?
Pretty much.
With me, as usual, is my compadre, my partner in crime, the zen to my zang or something, the yin to my yang, the fly in the ointment, the bad penny that always turns up, Mr. John Mercer.
The monkey in the wrench, the pain in the ass. Bass, how low can you go?
Death roll, what a brother knows.
What up?
This is it. I'm currently watching the progress bar on my Xbox 360 as it downloads Dungeons & Dragon Daggerdale, according to Xbox Live.
I don't know if that's the lamest or greatest name I've ever seen for an RPG.
I don't know. I don't know what's worse, the fact that, you know, it's called Daggerdale, or the fact that they actually misspelled Dungeons & Dragons by leaving out an S. I mean, who the hell misspells Dungeons & Dragons?
So what is it, Dungeon & Dragons or Dungeons & Dragon?
Dungeons & Dragon.
That sounds like a law firm.
Maybe.
You know,
Dragons and Daggerdale.
It's Philip Dungeon, Robert Dungeon, and William Dragon.
Philip Dungeon, Robert Dragon, and Bill Daggerdale.
Yeah. Dungeons and Dragon, Daggerdale.
Dungeon, and, Dragon, and Daggerdale.
If you have an annuity and you need cash now.
Have you or a loved one been in an accident?
Oh, man, I remember Jim the Hammer. Awesome.
Dungeon, Dragon, and Daggerdale will fight for you.
Either that or they're going to Red Ring your 360.
Yeah, either that or, yeah, pretty much. It's better goddamn work because I use this their crappy online thing on Xbox.com.
Yeah.
And apparently when I got home, it said it was registered to another console or something. So if I download this and it's only a trial, I'm going to be very unhappy.
Now, seeing I'm painfully on hip, you know, I'm about as far removed as Vin Diesel as it gets. Despite my massive Herculean physique, tell me a little bit about Dungeons and Dragon Daggerdale.
Information has been sparse at best.
Yeah,
you know it hasn't been what I would call a widely promoted Xbox Live Arcade release. Like,
but I mean, what
been...
is this like? Yeah, in my head right now, I'm picturing, you know, a downloadable version of Neverwinter Nights. Is that what we're going for here? Or
it's probably more a downloadable version of Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance.
No, nothing wrong with that. Dark Alliance rules.
No, I mean, I thought Dark Alliance was pretty great, and I know the major reviews have started trickling out. I'm not sure what the game trailer's review was, but I know Joystick only gave it like a 1.5 out of 5 because they claimed it was really buggy and stuff. But there have been a few other sites, like a few of the less mainstream sites, have actually been pretty favorable. One site even called it, you know, the offspring of Dragon Age Origins and Diablo, which is, you know, two great tastes that would probably taste great together.
If it weren't already called Torchlight.
Or
Magic of Vietnams.
Now, Torchlight is more just Diablo.
Yeah, Diablo-flavored Diablo.
Yeah, Torchlight is Diablo.
Anime-flavored Diablo.
Diablo, World of Warcraft graphic engine.
Yeah. isn't that what Diablo 3 is going to be?
Touché.
Diablo with rainbows? But you want to know something? I, like, all these people complain about rainbows and, you know, unicorns and stuff in Diablo 3. It's going to be like the cover of a Dio album. And Dio was fucking awesome.
It's going to be metal.
It's going to be so metal.
Speaking of, yeah, why not? Let's kick things off with our news segment. We'll start with the news this week instead of our usual formula. We're going to mix it up. We're changing the game.
That's right.
Video game podcast. What do you know about video game podcasts?
Permanently change the podcasting game.
What do you know about ripping off other internet memes? What do you know about being unoriginal pieces of repeating crap?
All right, here we go. Here we go.
Into breaking news, the PlayStation crisis is over, and the peasants rejoiced.
I've been rejoicing. I've been rejoicing all week, smashing fools with their own skulls.
I, in much the same fashion as when it went down, it was about 4 days before I realized it was back up again.
I was pretty much the same way. I think I logged into Facebook one day and saw Trops coming back up.
Yeah, I saw about a million trophies appearing.
Yeah, guys were paying the fees again.
Yeah.
And, it didn't even dawn on me right away. The trophies were coming up. I was like, hey, Dan's been playing a lot of L.A. Noire.
Hey, Dan's been playing a lot of Medal of Honor.
Yeah.
Dan's been playing a lot of... Everything, whoa, Dan
really
plays a lot of games. which is cool, you know? Shout-outs to Mr. Moore, who gave us our awesome theme song, which you may or may not hear this episode because I'm recovering from a nasty computer crash.
Catastrophic computer crash.
Catastrophic failure. Yeah, catastrophic. You thought the PlayStation crisis was bad?
Your computer hit critical mass last week.
It did. It really did. In other news, yes, my computer did hit critical mass. I tried to plug a faulty USB drive in there in desperation of recovering 8 years' worth of data or 4 years' worth of data. And promptly fried my system, which was, it's a great way to start a week. I recommend it to anybody, you know, lose
two scoops of suck.
A lot of blood and sweat in concentrated data form when you're too stupid to do a backup. And also fry your massive gaming PC that's less than a year old. So, you know, it's a fun way to start a week. I recommend it to anybody. It really, you know, it tests your stress levels. You know, it's a good challenge. It's a lot better than, you know, raiding Rage Fire Chasm or like, prestiging for the 30th time.
But you have rebuilt it. You have the technology.
I have the technology. I have made it faster, stronger, you know. So you know, in every cloud, there's a silver lining. I did get to, like, beef up my gaming PC that much more.
That you're not going to be playing WoW on.
That I will not be playing WoW on, no. I will probably be playing The Witcher 2 as soon as I get the opportunity.
That son of a witch. Dylan, you son of a witch.
In other news, we're a little late on this one because, hey, we didn't podcast last week, but there was a huge Call of Duty Modern Warfare leak of information. Or did we talk about the information leak?
Maybe no, we did. We talked about the information leak at your store, but I was just two of us being jackasses. We weren't actually,
actually
recording.
I get confused sometimes.
Where are my false teeth?
Where are my pills? Oh, I've got a pint in my hand. It's all good. Anyway, it's a great
big
Modern Warfare.
Why isn't there any vodka in this orange juice? Just a second, I gotta reach for my bar. Come to daddy. Closest thing to me was Disaronno, but I bet you this is gonna be tasty.
Disaronno and orange juice?
Hey, it's on the back of the bottle.
Hey!
They call it a Disaronno splash.
I worry about you sometimes.
Oh, and I didn't actually rent those Twilight movies. That was all lies.
I worry about you sometimes.
Lies spouted by a scornful woman.
Ooh, sparklies! You got your drink?
I got my drink.
Your drink out? Okay, so there was a big Modern Warfare 3 leak.
Huge.
Pretty much the entirety of the single-player game was thrown out there for all to read. A lot of details about the online and what kind of features were being added and stuff. It was really big information overload, I guess. And what I found most curious about it was Activision's reaction was like, oh, well, it's out there now. Which kind of leads me to believe that maybe it wasn't so much a leak as a... planned
spill.
Yeah, planned. Like,
what do they call that? A toxic waste dump.
Yeah, carefully calculated waste disposal.
Activision buried some barrels of Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3 behind a school.
So alongside that, we got a new trailer, which showed off the snazzy old graphics engine. I can't say the pretty new graphics engine, but the snazzy old graphics engine. It's not an ugly-looking game by any stretch. You know, it's very, very competent looking, and all of this talk, I mean, I know we were just as guilty as anybody else of how they're using a 4 or 5 or 6 year old engine, and they need to update, and wah, cry, cry, cry. You know what? I'm going to throw it out there now.
Pull the ambulance over to the side of the road?
Yeah, pull that bus over to the corner of the pretentiousness turnpike, because you know what? It looks fine. It looks A-okay. It looks cool.
Sounds like you got all the old graphics engine bitching out of your system when we were moaning on Valve last time.
We were bitching about Source, yeah. But yeah, it does. It looks great. It looks pretty cool in action. I mean, no, it doesn't look as good as Battlefield 3, but you know, right now there's
few
nothing
things do.
That looks as good as Battlefield 3. So very well, you know, 2 points. I'm sure everybody and their dog has seen this trailer by now. But what kind of surprises me, and I don't know if you found this, John, or not, but this is definitely something I've observed in my local circles.
Yeah.
Even people who in the past were incredibly excited by Call of Duty.
The slavering hordes.
This one kind of seems to have hit with the thought of like a wet cat.
I tell you,
do you get that impression? I got that impression.
Okay, they've run into, and I can speak from experience, you know, in 1995 when Bad Boys came out and then 96 when The Rock came out, I was admittedly a Michael Bay fan.
Okay.
But then, you know, he's had his ups and his downs. I'm not a Pearl Harbor hater, but you got to the point of these last couple Transformers movies, and which are very similar to me to the Call of Duty games. How many cities can you blow up?
I think it's at least 4 in Modern Warfare 3.
Like, I was looking at it, and the first thing popped in my head were, you know, the type of knuckle draggers that are going to be talking about it on the bus. Buddy, our heroes in the Call of Duty Modern Warfare 4, Future Warfares, they blows up the moon, bah.
And yes, that is an accurate representation of the bus that travels between, say, Kilbride and the Village Shopping Center.
The bus that Kevin Woolridge rides every day.
Yeah, for those of you who are geographically impaired, for those of you who aren't from Newfoundland, basically it's kind of like the only bus into unholy territory. It's, you know, as if you were, you know, riding the last bus out of New York City in Escape from L.A. or Escape from New York, sorry.
Oh, man,
you know,
I picture you're on that bus and you look at the side and you can see, like, Lord Humongous and the Warriors of the Wasteland riding alongside the thing on their death bikes.
Riding across the vast wastes.
Yeah, that's right. Only out of the waste, the Mad Max isn't coming to save you.
No, he's not.
No,
your only hope is
not coming.
Your only hope is a shopping center that's been going downhill since Walmart pulled out of it.
Ouch. Oh, God, that was a decade ago.
So it's really downhill now.
I remember that Walmart closed right around the time I bought Die Hard 2 when I should have been studying for my exams in university.
Anyway.
Yeah.
We digress. So, yeah, these mouth breathers and knuckle draggers. That's horrible. We're basically attacking the Call of Duty fan base, and for that I sincerely apologize, because I know you're not all mouth breathers and knuckle draggers. I know that. Only about 60% of you are. Maybe 70.
Sick burn. But
I had something else, I lost it. I had more news and it's gone.
I'm sure it's going to come out. I'm sure everyone's going to love the multiplayer as usual. But I can't help but wonder after the backlash that Black Ops, that the BOPs experienced, if that's going to play into Omni-Consumer Products profiting on this one.
I honestly, you know, saying Modern Warfare 3 is not going to make as much money is like saying, I don't know, Cars 2 is not going to make money. You know, it's a guaranteed sell. It's,
yeah.
I mean, it's money in the bank. I mean, regardless of the critical, I know the fan reception definitely wasn't where the critical reception was on BLOPS.
No.
I know there was a lot of negative feedback on BLOPS. I know I saw copies traded in less than 48 hours after the game was released. You know, so it's kind of one of those situations. But I mean, when you got a product so huge, you're going to get the disenfranchised. You're going to get the people who swear by the one before or the two before that, you know, like it's just the way it is. I mean, I swear by Call of Duty 3 and Modern Warfare, for the original Modern Warfare. Like, to me, that was the high point of the series. And I know there are a lot of people who agree with me, but there are also a lot of people who love the hell out of Modern Warfare 2 and just couldn't be bothered with any of the other entries in the series, you know?
No, I kind of felt the first Modern Warfare got the escalation and everything perfectly. They didn't need to shoot up an airport full of people and how many nukes got detonated in Modern Warfare 2?
I think it was just one, but I'm not sure. It might have been two.
But, I mean, you know, it was fresh in the first game. And the first one had that, you know, that awesome level where you you seized the Middle Eastern TV station.
Yeah, yeah. There was a lot of good in the original Modern Warfare. I mean, a lot more good than bad. Some of the pacing.
I still remember my jaw dropped. I think it was the very first level in it when you're on the British guys.
The ship.
SAS guys out on the tanker ship, and the thing starts to capsize.
That was amazing. While you're absolutely jaw dropping.
That was incredible.
Yeah, absolutely jaw dropping stuff. You know, I don't know. I think it's basically. I think we're into now the law of diminishing returns.
Yeah.
You know, it's just it's gotten to the point where now it's routine. It's become rote, and I mean
we're in the latter era of the Pierce Brosnan Bond movies.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we're to the point now where it's to be expected. We know pretty much everything that's going to go on, and how many people really play these games for the single player anymore?
I do.
Oh, I mean myself as well, but we're in the extreme minority.
I'm just really hoping now that, you know, in a couple of years' time, we're going to get the badass, gritty Call of Duty relaunch.
I'd be down with that. You know, I could get behind that for sure. I'd definitely appreciate something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll still give it to EA because Medal of Honor stuck to the reality guns, which, you know, both of these series, when they started, that's what they were all about, was paying homage and being realistic. And, I mean, we've banged
well,
it.
Well, dude, even when it comes down to the whole, you know, action movie trope thing, I still think Bad Company does it better.
Bad Company is definitely more of a unified experience, I think. Like, it doesn't have quite the same highs that the Call of Duty games do, but, the lulls are a lot more reasonable.
Exactly.
You know?
I mean, Bad Company, I mean, you feel like you're playing as the A-team.
Yeah, and I mean, you get into, like, okay, according to this whole plot synopsis for this level synopsis, whatever, game design document for Modern Warfare 3... Basically, the entire game consists of traveling from city to city to city in pursuit of this Makarov guy, who's about as memorable as a can of, I don't know, Pepsi. You know, like, he looks like any other stereotypical Russian bad guy. There's nothing really amazing about this character.
I will not turn over the weapon. Yes, you will, because I'm American. You have defeated me.
Well, I mean, you know, you're chasing this guy who's about as menacing as a wet paper bag with a cat inside of it. And he keeps escaping. So, okay, we go to England, then we go to Germany, then we go to France, then we go to New York, then we go to the Middle East. And I'm wondering how many times we hear in a surly British accent, "Damn it, he got away again."
I tell you, man, if they really wanted to tie into their fan base, they should have got FPS Russia to voice Makarov. Every time he's getting away, he can twirl his evil Russian goatee. And as always, my friend, have a nice day. Hello, my friends. And then he blows up a city.
And then blow up a city. But yeah, apparently they start with a big attack on New York City, and then there's Germany and France and England. And you know what? Great. It could be awesome. I know that last trailer, as down on the game as I wanted to be and as damning as I wanted to be, that last trailer did kind of make me smile.
Suitably epic.
Yeah, when you see the little WW3 and then the W turns into the M and you see Modern Warfare, like, I was like, okay, that's kind of cool, that's kind of classy, you know, like, yeah. I thought it was neat.
Nice.
I gotta say, I did think it was a pretty cool trailer, but again, of course, I mean, I know I'll get excited. The same thing happened with Black Ops. You know, I saw the gameplay reveal at E3 when they were piling in a Hind D around Vietnam, and I thought, this looks awesome, and then I sat down to play the game and I'm a skateboard with a machine gun, this is boring. So, you know,
my biggest problem with Black Ops, man, is I was promised the Nam and I didn't get enough of the Nam.
I got Cuba. I got assassinating Fidel Castro, which, okay.
In bullet time.
In bullet, yeah, okay. I got walking down the streets of Havana, which looked more like, you know, Medal of Honor Frontline on PS2.
Yeah.
I felt like I was in Arnhem again. I don't know, it was just, there was so much of that game that felt routine to me, and parts that were cool went on for far too long. And parts
so much potential to be awesome too, dude.
Yeah.
Even if it wasn't the Nam, just, you know, like having a first person shooter set in the 1960s Cold War espionage world. That game should have been pure concentrated badass.
I mean, things like SR-71 Blackbirds and, you know, like, spies and it should have been so much better.
Yeah, I mean, they loaded on Gary Oldman again, and it was that for only for that horrible Escape the Gulag level.
Ugh. It's not. I will say though, there's nothing in it that comes remotely close to being as god awful as Lance Henriksen in Modern Warfare 2.
What a waste of Lance! How do you mess up Lance Henriksen?
You give him a screenplay that reads like it's out of Guns and Ammo magazine.
There you go. And he'll do it, too, because Lance loves a book.
Lance loves the smell of money.
You know, all you had to do, guys, was get all of his lines just had to be lifted out of Hard Target, and that game would have been awesome.
I just, oh. Enough of the COD talk.
Yeah. Anything else big in the news?
Rumor came out today, I believe. I don't even think it really falls as rumor. It's kind of more of a leak, I guess. The ESRB posted a rating for The Witcher 2 on Xbox 360.
You son of a witch.
Now, The Witcher 2 has been garnering some really amazing ink, like really fantastic reviews. I think Games Radar, who lately have been kind of a bastion of sanity for me in the horrible Wild West that is online video game journalism, actually gave the game a 10 out of 10. Which I believe is the first time I've ever seen them do that. And, I mean, it looks like a very stunning game. By all accounts, I think the lowest review score I saw for it was like an 8.75. By all accounts, it's a very, very stunning achievement. And for this to be coming to consoles, rumor has it CD Projekt Red is going to be announcing a title at E3 and that console owners will be very pleased. So I'm thinking this is going to be our Witcher 2 for Xbox 360 and hopefully PlayStation 3. But hey, if I can get it on 360, I'd be satisfied.
Well, I mean, at least it's a console.
At least it's a console, you know, and the PC version does support Xbox 360 controller support. It's geared for the 360 controller, like Two Worlds 2 was. I mean, the entire game interface and everything changes to match the 360 controller. So it shouldn't be too hard of a port. You know, it should be something fairly straightforward.
I'm seeing if there's anything else big and exciting in the news. Spike TV are airing EA's E3 media briefing.
Hmm. Apparently the Sony media briefing is scheduled for 5 hours.
Jesus.
Now, apparently it's a media briefing followed by some kind of other event. Like, I'm assuming it might be, you know, similar to what Nintendo did with the 3DS reveal, where they just let everybody go play the games for a while. So I'm thinking it's going to be all NGP. You know, I'm thinking they're going to show NGP, give a release date, maybe a proper name, and then just throw a bunch of demo units out there and say, hey, guess what? You guys can all play it for the next 2 hours.
You can sign up now for free PSN identity theft protection.
Ooh.
Somebody better tell Jack Bastard about that.
This is Jack Bastard on the front lines.
That's important news.
Important. Very important. Beyond that, I don't think there was much else exciting this week. I think it's been a pretty slow news week.
Well, in news for me, I think I've lost my goddamn mind because I went and pre-ordered Shadow of the Damned.
Oh, John.
No, because I hate Suda51 with every fiber of my being.
Yeah, and this game sounds insane.
Because this guy takes things that are like, you know, I think more action games need pro wrestling moves, but he takes it and puts it in games that absolutely suck. Like No More Heroes. But I look at it and I'm like, wow, that looks like it plays like Vanquish. I really liked Vanquish.
I just. When I see it, I just think this is like something that Dave Johnson would buy.
Yeah, and I kind of buy the same types of games as Dave, but I'm not buying Jim Cotta.
Fair enough.
But no, the what is this leading into for me is just I don't know if Shinji Mikami is kind of lately becoming this, you know, this kind of foil to temper the weirder Japanese developers for Western audiences. Like, he took a lot of Vanquish was Hideki Kamiya was the guy behind Bayonetta and Devil May Cry. A lot of that was his idea, and then they took that and Mikami built this awesome gameplay around it.
And, I mean, we all know how awesome Vanquish was.
Yeah, and made it, like, accessible for more than otaku.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of hoping that with Shadows of the Damned, he can. Now, it's going to be a much more daunting affair, but.
Have you read any of the, like, game mechanics and stuff in this game?
I saw the Enlarge Your Johnson trailer.
Have you read, like, any of the interactions, like, the bizarreness that goes on in this game?
No, I haven't.
Well, maybe you should do that.
I played through Bayonetta. I'm ready for anything.
No, dude, Bayonetta is not Suda 51.
Okay.
You know,
that's right. At worst, that was Kamiya.
Yeah. So I'd advise you to go and read up a little bit more. And then maybe consider...
But you know what? If it sucks, I also pre-ordered Dark Souls. And I'm also thinking now, after seeing that last trailer, about pre-ordering Dragon Dogma.
The gameplay trailer?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very, very impressive.
Very pretty.
But it doesn't come out until early 2012, so...
I know, but hey, Capcom, keep up the good work.
For sure. Speaking of early 2012, Mass Effect 3 is pushed back. Is anyone really surprised?
No.
I'm kind of a little happy about that because it gives me more breathing room with Skyrim and Uncharted 3 and Dark Souls.
Also, dude, you know, they're kind of... and it's been happening over the past couple of years. You remember a couple of years ago when we had that big grumble come up from the gaming community because so many awesome games had been pushed back out of the holiday season into...
Into 2012.
Yeah, or I think it was into the beginning of 2010. You know, Darksiders started the year off. Then you had...
And
all this stuff that had been scheduled for fall. I'm kind of liking the idea of spacing out the big releases a little bit more. You know, as much bitching as I do about, you know, how stale Call of Duty gets and stuff like that, I never want to see a game out and out fail. I don't.
And
it's bad for the industry. And
even beyond that, I never want to see a game fail because of another game.
Exactly.
I don't want to see Skyrim fail because it comes out the same week as Call of Duty.
Yeah.
You know, it just doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't. And I mean, how many, you go onto any gaming forum board out there, and you're going to see it when two big releases come out around the same time. What should I buy, right? Brand X or Brand Y? Which should I
get? Go to the GameFAQs message board, and it's going to be all like, this or Skyrim? Yeah. You know, you go to the Modern Warfare 3 message board. Modern Warfare 3 or Skyrim? There is no freaking comparison, you moron.
Two games that couldn't get... You couldn't get any further apart.
Yeah, do you want a game that you're going to pump a couple of hundred hours into the multiplayer if you're into it? Or do you want a game that you're going to spend a couple of hundred hours by yourself playing? Like, that's what it all boils down to, you know?
Yeah.
Me, Skyrim, all the way. I should be finished with Uncharted 3 by then.
Oh, dude, you're going to have Uncharted 3 finished in a week.
If it's anything like the first two, I'll do it in one sitting.
Yeah. And won't complain at all.
Not at all. Not at all. Looking forward to it. November is already crowded enough. I mean, October 11th, Dark Souls. September, there's two titles.
Yeah, I kind of wish that... who releases the Batman games now? Warner Interactive?
That Batman game?
Yeah, that Batman game.
Batman game.
I was kind of hoping, you know, they'd hold on to their sanity and keep Arkham City in the late summer.
Yeah, no, they're going September.
Yeah, okay, well, that's not too bad. I thought they were going November with it.
I think it's you could be right, yeah, but like, that's insane. That is insane.
You know, fellas, you carved out a nice little niche in late summer with Arkham Asylum.
I think, and I, you know, you can call me out on this after the fact, but I really, one of my predictions, one of the big losers of 2011 will be Arkham City.
Not critically wise.
No, not critically, but the hype just doesn't seem to be there that was there for Arkham Asylum. Because, you know, like, Arkham Asylum, as well-reviewed as it was a divisive game. Not everybody unconditionally loved Arkham Asylum.
And I'm not seeing, like, Arkham Asylum in the months leading up to, they had those awesome villain reveal trailers.
Yeah.
I haven't seen any of that for Arkham City yet.
Yeah, and I mean, Arkham City, yes, it's being hyped fairly extensively and stuff, and I'm sure it'll be a fantastic game. I'm sure they'll improve on Arkham Asylum in every way, shape, and form. But are people still excited for it? You know, are people still... You know, ready for it. Like, do people still want it, I guess is the word.
Well, dude, I mean, when Arkham Asylum came out, I think that was the same summer as The Dark Knight, wasn't it?
Yeah, I believe so.
Everyone was still... Batmania was still sweeping the nation.
Yeah.
Right? I remember you, me, and Dobbin and Ackerman joking about getting the Collector's Edition so we could take the Batarang and go be vigilantes.
Go fight crime.
Exactly. You know, I was going to...
Which we did, and it ended in tears.
Tears for the people we fought. Scott Pilgrim got nothing on me.
We were just too brutal to be Batman.
Exactly. We were like the fake Batman, you know, the ones that we were wearing hockey pads. we had no right.
No. We didn't. But, yeah, you know, Arkham City, and, of course, there's other stuff. I mean, I almost think that maybe, possibly, Gears of War 3 might be another one that kind of...
Oh, let's not get crazy here now.
I don't know, man. I don't know. Like, it'll do well.
I'm not seeing the same hype for it either. And it's
it's going to be a million seller for sure, you know. But, I mean, even, like, the multiplayer beta, it didn't seem to light my Xbox on fire like the other Gears games did. I mean, I know with me, Gears was always a huge deal. Like, I'd hop online and everyone on my friend list is online playing Gears of War, you know?
You'd be sitting down playing Guitar Hero and get invites for Gears of War.
Yeah, you know, that kind of thing. But it seems like the Gears of War 3 beta, there might have been one or two guys on my list who were into it, but the vast majority kind of stayed away, which is, I was surprised with. I was really surprised. And I really kind of expected it, especially considering, like, the feedback I heard was overwhelmingly positive.
Now, here's a divisive point. Do you think Gears 3 might be hurt by Microsoft's handling of the, you know, they're kind of shifting towards the more casual market in the past year?
I you know what? I actually kind of think it is. I actually kind of think all of Microsoft's, like, genre offerings are kind of...
I know the Kinect sold a hojillion copies, right?
Yeah, but who's buying them?
Exactly. But then I mean, look, when is the last time, like, critically and commercially, you heard of a Microsoft first-party product that, you know, blew the socks off of everyone?
It's been a while.
It has been a while.
And, I mean, like, I think E3 this year, I think they might be able to pull out some guns, you know? Like, I'm sure Gears will be there in a huge way.
Oh, dude, they need to... this E3, they need to flex like nothing else. They need to pull... Yeah. They need to pull what Nintendo did last year.
Exactly.
I mean, Nintendo didn't deliver on any of it, strongly, in my opinion. But, I mean...
There were a few letdowns there, for sure.
But, I mean, yeah, Microsoft need to take out the tickets to the gun show and... Let everyone remember why they bought the goddamn system in 2005, 2006 anyway.
Yeah.
You know, but go back to the days when they were, you know, they were an unstoppable train. Q Denzel,
I got kind of a hunch.
That thing's under power.
I got kind of a hunch. I don't know. Like, I mean, it's not even really a hunch. This is not my professional video game analyst mind talking, because, you know, myself and Michael Pachter have so much in common there.
You're both broadcast journalists.
Yeah, and you know, like, more often than not, my predictions come out of thin air and are right, whereas his are, you know, somewhat less so.
Yeah.
But I won't toot my own horn there. But, you know, like, part of me wants to say, or part of me thinks, you know, or got this feeling in the pit of my gut, that the reason Microsoft has been so quiet for the last year or so is because they're actually preparing to ramp up to their next gen. And now, whether it's this E3 or next E3, I got a feeling that it's coming sooner than people think it is.
Yeah. What saddens me about that, man, is that's not always the answer.
It's not. And above and beyond that, I look at the original Xbox and what had happened, you know, when the original Xbox, when the 360 was announced, they basically immediately discontinued.
Abandoned ship.
Completely, exactly. And the Xbox was just really starting to hit its groove, you know. It was just really starting to find its stride. To the point that people were saying, you know, like, what do we need a new system for? We've got Doom 3, we've got Chaos Theory, we've got Chronicles of Riddick. These games all look fantastic. Do we really need a next-gen system?
Do you remember when I bought Burnout Revenge, I think it was, for Xbox? And we were looking at it, like, this is just as good as the friggin' 360 demos we're seeing in the stores.
Yeah. I'm really kind of wondering if they might be trying to pull the same thing again, you know, if they might be, but, like, instead of suddenly just disconnecting, they're shifting gears on the original Xbox. They're kind of pushing it more to the casual market and that kind of stuff to kind of keep it alive.
I don't know.
You know? Do you think maybe that's what's going on?
But
do you think that's a possibility?
New systems cost millions in R&D. And after... I know Microsoft carved out a huge market share this time, but nobody knows exactly how much money they've been losing on that, on the Red Ring debacle. Right.
I don't think it's as big a deal as people make it out to be. I think it more cost them in like trust and support than anything else.
But you don't want to rush in R&D and rush another system out onto the market and go through that shit again for another 5 years.
Oh no, for sure. No. But I mean, Microsoft knows where the money is. You know, they know the money's in the software and in Xbox Live.
Yeah.
And that's all they care about. That's where they're making their cash. They're making their cash on every owner of an Xbox 360 who's paying $59 a year to run Xbox Live, and then points on top of that, and everyone who runs out to buy software. That's where their cash. That's their cash cow. and their accessories, because everything is proprietary and they overcharge for all of it. So, you know, that's where their money is coming from.
Jesus, wow, bitter much?
No, well, I mean, it's simple fact. Well, you know, when you're looking at a 120 gig or 240
I say good business is where you find it.
Yeah, you know, you're paying.
I had a guaranteed military sale on Xbox 360.
Spare parts for 5 years.
Who cares if it worked or not?
Okay. But no, you look
that's
at
gonna
it.
Be, that's going to have to be the image on the webpage now, is Dick Jones in front of all the TV screens and they all with the Xbox 360. Load up. I'm cashing you out.
Dick Jones, video game console concepts.
Senior Vice President, video game console concepts. Ask any developer and they'll tell you.
The whole thing is with it, you know, like, okay, look at it this way. You just went out and bought an Xbox 360 Slim for $149. You got a 4 gig internal memory. That's basically useless. It's basically, you know, you want to download anything, have fun with that.
Yeah.
You go out and you want to buy, you know, the only hard drive they offer, which is the 250 gigabyte hard drive. You're getting a 2.5-inch SATA drive in a custom enclosure for $150.
I upgraded my PS3 to a 500 gigabytes. It's a beast, and I mean the whole thing cost me $70.
You can buy a 1 terabyte 2.5-inch drive for $100. But because it's in a custom enclosure and comes in fancy Microsoft packaging, it's $150 for a 250 gig.
Yeah.
You know, a hard drive that would cost you less than four bills, you know, less than $40 on the average PC market. You know, like it's
four bills. What are you, street now?
less than what? Less than $40.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. Which is absolutely crazy. And then on top of that, you know, their controllers are $50 because they have a new little cross pad that is, you know, changeable and still sucks either way. You're paying $100 for a wireless N bridge, which, you know, should have been built into the machines to begin with. Now, of course, if you're getting the Slim, the wireless is built in, which is great, you know, all fine and dandy. But, okay, to put it into even more perspective, $149.99 for a Slim Xbox 360, or $99.99 for a wireless N router or wireless N receiver.
Yeah.
So you're telling me you're paying $100 for the receiver that's built into the machine, and then the rest of the console is only worth $50? Is that what you're telling me? You know, this is my problem with Microsoft. Fine, I'm paying $59.99 a year for Xbox Live. That expires. I can't use my Netflix anymore.
Yeah.
Why can't I use my Netflix anymore? You know, like, that is insane. I'm paying $8 a month to use Netflix, but I can't because my Xbox Live Gold has expired. I can't send you a voice message because I don't have Xbox Live Gold. I can't download a free demo because I don't have Xbox Live Gold. I have to wait 2 weeks.
You're a second-class citizen. Yeah.
I'm a second-class citizen. This is my problem with Microsoft's business strategy. This is why they drive me so insane.
And yet people will lap it up.
Oh, yeah, for sure. This is why the company pisses me off so much. And this is why the Xbox will continue to thrive, because they're going to find a whole new subculture to market it to now when all the Kinect people, you know, latch onto the system after the hardcore gamers gravitate to their next-gen console, which they'll probably unveil next year.
There you go. On to more important news, what have you been playing the past week?
This week?
I know it's going to be the same answer as me.
Okay, before we get into the obvious answer, before we both start gushing and splooging and
don't ever use that word again.
Before we start throwing some massive love at Rockstar, I did pick up the first Templar for Xbox 360.
Yes,
and played about an hour, maybe an hour and a half of it, which is it's by some European development studio somewhere. It was released by a company I've never heard of. But it's actually pretty cool. It's actually kind of a neat game. Graphically, it's not amazing, but it runs solid as hell. You know, it's pretty rock solid frame rate wise and stuff.
We could run another podcast right next to this one, and the audio would sync up perfectly, except when you said The Last Templar, back then it'd be Divinity 2.
The First Templar.
The First Templar, sorry. But it's pretty cool, and
It's a much better game than, say, Divinity 2 or the original Two Worlds. It is actually a competently executed game, and it is also not an RPG.
Oh!
It's more of an action game. It's more, you know...
So I might actually dig this one, like that awesome... I think it's called Rise of the Argonauts.
It does actually... It is very reminiscent of Rise of the Argonauts.
Which was so much badass.
Oh, only without the BioWare-inspired dialogue scenes.
Okay. Does it still have the enormous, like, Hercules-type character, though?
No, it doesn't.
A guy whose biceps are thicker than two normal characters?
It's more of a realistic portrayal. Like, the characters are more realistically designed and stuff. It's set in the 16th century. The guys who did the art design obviously sat down and watched Kingdom of Heaven about 400 times. You know, like, it's got a really cool look to it. Even though the graphics themselves are not what I'd call, like, amazing, the art design really sells it well. It's got some neat voice acting, and the storyline's actually pretty damn cool. And the combat is, it's essentially combo-driven hack-and-slash gameplay, but it's got some depth to it. It almost reminds me of Fable.
Okay.
There's a pretty detailed skill tree in there that you unlock. You can switch back and forth between characters, like your two characters. There is online drop-in, drop-out co-op, which is pretty cool. And in general, it's just, you know, like, For the type of game that it is, it's pretty well executed. It's not, you know, as crappy as I would have expected it to be. I mean, I knew right from the get-go it's something I would enjoy because of the source material and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But control-wise, it's an easy game to pick up and play. It's pretty engaging. I'd give it a 7 out of 10.
Nice.
I also took the plastic off of Codemasters' latest racing epic, Dirt 3.
Yeah.
Which is, you know... if you're familiar with the series at all, it's essentially Hardcore Rally, only they've mixed it up with some, like, Rally Raid, which is, you know, basically multiple car rally, or, like, trucks, T1 trucks, big, huge trucks with weight in the back, and you're racing across an open dirt track. You know, it's a racing game. It's a very, very, very gorgeous, drop-dead, super pretty racing game that runs lickety-fast and is, like, extremely smooth. And it has the usual, you know, the awesome presentation that the series is known for. It's got an awesome variety of events. It's a little toned down a little from Dirt 2. Dirt 2 kind of went the whole extreme games route and stuff, and the presentation took a little bit of adjusting to get used to, especially for somebody who's used to hardcore like Euro Rally.
Yeah.
But Dirt 2 did become pretty goddamn addictive, and I kind of miss...
I used to call Dirt 2 Motorstorm Realized.
Yeah, there you go. That's a good example, too.
Yeah.
And I do kind of miss the presence of all of the pro drivers. Like, in Dirt 2, you had a lot of smack talk or a lot of complimentary talk. And that's like it felt, you know, like you were part of this racing career, whereas Dirt 3 feels more video game-ish in that regard. But it is, I mean, the gameplay is phenomenal. And for anyone who's at all into rally racing and driving like myself, just to be able to play, to physically pick up a controller and play some of these insane, I think they call them Gymkhana, racing events that American driver...
Gymkhana, Dave. Kana.
Yeah. Kana, not Kata. Kana.
There's no Jonathan Cabot in Dirt 3.
No, it was actually created by an American rally driver named Ken Block, who hop on YouTube, search for Ken Block, watch some of these videos. This guy is insane. Like, the maneuvering he can do... He typically drives, it's an all-wheel drive Subaru Impreza hatchback, WRX STI, that's of course been modified for rally with turbos and all that kind of stuff. It's like a 320 horsepower car. But this man is, like, the amount of finesse and fine control that he shows with this vehicle is nothing short of jaw-droppingly astounding. Like, the man is able to donut around, like, you know, something as small as a light pole, and have the nose of the car facing directly into the pole the entire time, which is not something that, like, you know, like, without wearing that light pole, most sane people would be able to do. This guy is just, he is a remarkable driver, and the ability to play through some of the events.
Normal people try to pull a pull a donut. This guy pulls a pretzel.
Yes, you know, like, and to be able to actually play this stuff, yeah, it's really trial and error. There's a lot of retry, but... Man, when you nail it, it just feels so goddamn awesome. It feels so good.
To me, man, they just feel like little bonus challenges.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
It's just
something,
you know, you played the rest of the game, now here's some extra fun for you.
Yeah, and it is, you know, like, it is, as far as, you know, elevating the series and stuff. It is definitely the most refined version so far. Again, it looks stunning in motion. It is a beautiful looking game. It's a 9 out of 10.
Beautiful.
And last, well, second last, sorry, I should say, I did get a copy of The Witcher 2.
You son of a witch.
For PC. It's the fully loaded, you know, deluxe, leather-wrapped, 5-speed manual.
How many times does The Witcher have sex in the first 10 minutes of this game?
I'll get to that.
Okay.
But it is a beautiful collector's edition. In fact, one of the very nicest collector's editions I've ever seen. However, my laptop just choked on it. And my laptop is no slouch. My laptop is a state-of-the-art rig. You know, it is an i7-9000. It's got 7 cores all running at crazy gigahoops. And it's got decent video.
Gigawatts.
Gigawatts. It's what we refer, we in the computer savvy circles call a Crisis on High rig. You know, it can run Crisis on High. It's a beast of a laptop. You know, it's great. I'm super immensely happy with it. However, even on the lowest settings, The Witcher 2's frame rate was just unplayable. So I played the opening segment, which was about 10 or 15 minutes long, and I just said, I can't suffer through this. I got to wait till I get my desktop up and running again. I'll get to it. You know, I'll get to it when my desktop's up and running. Now, again, like I said earlier, it's been getting rave reviews. The game, even on the lowest settings, is drop-dead slavishly beautiful. It is, you know, the nicest-looking RPG I've ever seen in my life. Even on low settings, it smokes things like, you know, Mass Effect 2, which was definitely no slouch in the visuals department. It is a beautiful, beautiful machine. Like, beautiful, beautiful game. And if it's even half as good as the first one, it's going to be a real treat to play through. And I can't wait to get my desktop PC all rearing to go. You know, hopefully later this week I'll really get to dig into it.
Man, he is an ugly dude, isn't he?
Geralt of Rivia.
Yeah.
He is. He's been through the ringer.
Like, he kind of had that, you know, despite the scars, that whole pretty elven thing going on in the first game. But, I mean, dude, he looks like Viggo the Carpathian.
He was still pretty ugly in the first one as well.
Okay.
Yeah, he's a pretty cool character, actually. He's a very interesting protagonist. And the game, like, the way it handles moral choices and stuff like that, it's nowhere... Like, it goes so far beyond...
This guy's face is worse than Daniel Craig.
I mean, I love my BioWare. BioWare are probably my favorite developer out there for console games and stuff, but what these guys, what The Witcher, even in the first game, what these guys did with morality choices and stuff like that and how it directly affected gameplay makes the BioWare stuff look pedestrian. You know, it makes it look totally pedestrian. And The Witcher 2 seems to really even build on that even further. So I'm really looking forward to spending some time with it.
Nice.
I can't give a score. It's too early. And last...
I love me my dark fantasy, though.
Yeah, yeah. And if anything, it is definitely that. And I mean, even beyond, you know, Dragon Age, they called it dark fantasy, but dwarves still drank beer. Yeah. And, you know, it was still Lord of the Rings with a hint of darkness added to it. It was an R-rated Lord of the Rings, you know?
Whereas The Witcher, you are the killer of kings.
Yeah, and I mean, in the original Witcher, the game definitely did not feel like any other fantasy setting. You know, like, it really had a unique vibe to it. It really had a cool, decidedly dark and adult and very different fantasy tone, and not in the same regard as, like, say, a Game of Thrones, where adult means gratuitous sex scenes every 10 minutes. You know, it was more... Yes, there were gratuitous sex scenes, but just in general, the political themes, the darkness of how the races interacted with each other, like, you know, it was a really, really well thought out and really just different fantasy setting, and The Witcher 2 definitely takes it and runs with it as well. You know, it definitely doesn't feel like, you know, an R-rated Lord of the Rings. It is an entirely different vibe altogether, which is great, which is, like, something that I think RPGs need. I think they need to get away from, you know, I love my Lord of the Rings-style fantasy, and I love my traditional fantasy, but it's also cool to see something that really mixes it up in not at all half-assed manner, you know?
Yes, sir.
And last, and certainly not least, is, and I'm sure you've been playing a shitload of this one, too.
I have been.
L.A. Noire.
Oh, yes. The new black in gaming. As my ever so cleverly titled article for the week.
Right on. It's, man, who'd have thought that a year and a half or 2 years ago, when we read about you know, a semi-open world game set in 1940s Los Angeles, it would be so goddamn awesome.
Dude, I was picturing Mafia.
You know, yeah, like, even then, even with Mafia, you know, like, when you think 1940s Los Angeles, when you think, you know, Black Dahlia and L.A. Confidential and James Ellroy or Red Harvest or something, you know, like, the idea of that in a video game, to me, kind of felt, oh, here we go, you know, like, fast-talking, high trousers, you know, it's just, yeah, exactly. And even that first teaser they released way back, the black and white teaser, was just kind of like, huh, okay.
Oh, save some of that Red Dead money, Rockstar.
Yeah, because it's a short way down. Yeah. You know, it's a short trip. But no, man, after playing it,
get the plate filled with crow. Here we go.
Yeah. Has there been another studio this generation so artistically and creatively assured as Rockstar?
Dude, I just cannot believe that, like, every year, it seems these guys are taking larger and larger steps away from just the whole sandbox chaos that they created with Grand Theft Auto 3. They're a developer beyond now.
It seems like there is, you know, like everyone else, and I mean, and this includes, you know, BioWare, who are awesome, and, you know, like, some of the EA studios who've been churning out fantastic work. Even Platinum or Bethesda, who've all been making great games.
Yeah.
But it seems like Rockstar are just so far beyond.
Rockstar are making art.
It just seems they've, like, yeah. It almost feels like they skipped a generation.
The movie industry can start sweating the game industry now.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, and I mean, like, as much as I know it's awesomely trendy to bash GTA 4 now, but even with GTA 4, they got away from the immaturity of
Grand Theft Auto.
The PlayStation 2 Grand Theft Auto generation. And yeah, San Andreas was kind of a step towards it, but San Andreas still had a lot in common with stuff like Saints Row when that came along.
Dude,
you know,
see,
like,
was San Andreas the one that had Burger Shot?
Yeah. That was GTA 4.
What was it?
That was GTA 4, yeah. Okay. But, I mean, in general, GTA 4, I mean, with the storyline.
Oh, no, yeah, that's right. They had the chicken burger joint. Cluckin' Bell.
Cluckin' Bell.
Yeah. I rest my case.
And freckle bitches.
That was Saints Row.
Saints Row had freckle bitches, yeah.
Yeah, I can remember my wife getting very excited and calling me out of the room because she stole the freckle bitches truck. it was like a hamburger, a pickle, and a shake, and a thing of fries, and the truck was designed around that, and she was so sad when she crashed it. I said, "Joe, just go steal another one." but
yeah, you know, like it seems like it started with GTA 4, which was more cinematic and more narrative driven, more realized characters and that kind of thing. And then, I mean, Red Dead was just
Clint Eastwood, the video game.
Red Dead was a phenomenal, phenomenal achievement. And then L.A. Noir, like, I'm going to say it, I'm going to throw it out there right now, it is every bit as good as Red Dead Redemption. Each and every bit as good.
I do have to, like, I had to throw a warning out in my review, and same warning I gave young Lawrence a couple weeks ago. If you don't have any preconceived notions of what this game is going to be,
Rent it.
Everyone should go and plunk down the money for it eventually, but rent it.
Well, I look at it the same way I look at Red Dead Redemption. It is, you know, a fully realized video game for adults.
Yes.
Not for, like, grown-ups, but for adults. Grew up playing games.
Look at L.A. Noire. You got that big open world to explore. You can't punch anyone or shoot anyone until the game tells you it's time to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
The entire game is about being a detective.
You're a cop. You're one of the good guys, and the game really forces you into that role.
And not only
are
you one of the good guys, I mean, what's it, Phelps? Detective Phelps?
Yep.
I mean, you're Elliot Ness, right?
Elliot Ness.
This guy is by the book, believes he's doing the right thing, and wants nothing more than to clean up the slime of L.A.
You're Kenny Cosgrove from Mad Men, and how fucking awesome is that?
Yeah.
You know?
And I'm going to ask you a question. One of the villains I'm seeing in the game, the real estate developer?
I don't think I've seen him yet.
Okay, no, you see him in the beginning. You see them loading the sign up for his real estate development.
Oh, okay, I think, yeah, okay.
I swear to God, that looks just like John Noble. The guy who played
Jennifer? It is actually John Noble.
That's fucking incredible.
Yeah, I mean, like, the game is just, it is entirely and without mercy adult and yet still entire. Like, I mean, Heavy Rain last year. Heavy Rain was a great game. Heavy Rain was an amazing game. But like we've said before, Heavy Rain was the game for people who bought those PS3s to use as Blu-ray players.
Yeah.
You know, Heavy Rain was a game for adults. It was a very adult-oriented game. But it was for people who didn't generally have the dexterity or the hand-eye coordination to sit down and play a shooter or your average video game. L.A. Noire is a video game for people who've kind of outgrown the typical cliched, you know, Call of Duty or Halo, or, you know, it's for people who are fed up with Space Marines and modern combat.
When I sat down and played it, dude, it reminded me of the first time I ever saw a Michael Mann movie, the first time I felt like, wow, I'm, you know, titties.
I'm watching a movie that was written for grown-ups.
Titties, bullets, and swearing aren't going to do it for me anymore, even though this movie is filled with them.
Yeah, you know, and it is. I cannot get over the quality of the writing, the quality of the dialogue, the quality of the acting, the goddamn amazing facial motion capture. You know, it is.
Yeah, the facial motion. I know before the game came out, I was making fun of the fact that all the fedoras they're wearing look like helmets. Look a little too big for their head, but then you see the guys, you see them talking.
Yeah.
And it's like, I've never seen a game look that good. You know, normally in a game you get like the map mouth on the go.
Lip flap.
Yeah, and in this one you're getting, you know, like full range facial motion. You know, every character's face is moving around like Jim Carrey.
Yeah, it's all, you know, like enunciated. Every word is enunciated. It's stunning. It really is stunning.
The first time you break someone in interrogation.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a moment to be remembered.
And beyond that, some of the cases, man, like, there's some really disturbing content in this game.
Well, I mean, dude, okay, I know, like, there's a serial killer case, which is, you know, closely mirrors the Black Dahlia killer.
Yep.
I mean, you've got corruption in the police department, you've got arson, you've got,
I just finished the case.
And then you get to stuff like, you know, dealing with some booze hound lowlife who thinks it's fun to hit his wife.
I just finished a case, I believe it was called The Fallen Idol.
Yeah.
It's the last case you do in traffic.
Yeah.
And, man, it was, like, at least partially, definitely at least partially inspired by the whole Roman Polanski scandal from the 70s.
Yeah.
It was unfreaking believable. And, like, just the content, man, like, I was getting chills. I was like, this is freaking disturbing. This is really, you know, off the path, bleak, disturbing, sick, twisted shit in this game. You know, like, and it, but it's presented in such a fashion, it's presented in such an adult manner that you don't even flinch.
I mean, yeah, I'm looking,
you know,
at
like, and I'm thinking to myself, your average 15-year-old could not go into a store and rent this game.
No.
You know, like, it's just, it's so far beyond, you know, like, I remember we were all so shocked the first time we sat down with GTA 4. And Woolridge walks into a strip club, gets a lap dance by two girls,
and
Dobbin proceeds to pull out a shotgun and blow them both away, and we're all like, oh, that's so wrong! But, I mean, in this game, when you're investigating a crime scene, and the coroner points out a pair of young girls' panties that were torn, and says he's going to check them for semen samples, and you're just kind of like, oh, I can't believe I'm playing this! You know, it's just like, wow! And then you go and you find it, like,
But then there's
CD hidden cameras and drugs that they used to knock out the poor 15-year-old girl before they had their way with her. And it's just like, man, I cannot believe I am playing this in a video game.
I'm just sitting there the whole time saying, I can't wait till, you know, Cole eventually catches this guy so we can slug him one.
Yeah, oh, it was retarded.
Or make him cry before they slap the cuffs on him.
Yeah, like, it was just the way the game is presented is just, you know, it goes so far beyond in terms of subject matter and that kind of stuff. And I mean, like, every so often a game comes along that really does push the envelope and stuff, you know, but this is...
This one, it's not even an envelope anymore. We've moved on from envelopes. You're into package territory now.
Yeah, you're into boxes and, yeah, you know, those triangular-shaped FedEx cartons.
We have upgraded your container.
Yeah, it is really, you know... It's an amazing achievement. Absolutely
how
amazing.
How many people have, when it was coming out, were comparing it to Raymond Chandler or Mickey Spillane? I hope I pronounced that right, didn't I?
Yeah.
Okay, Philip Marlowe and Mike Hammer were comic book characters compared to the stuff you were going to see playing L.A. Noire. You were going face-to-face with evil.
It's Elroy, man. It's James Elroy.
And it's were just going. You like the stuff you're coming up against. It's not even cartoonish supervillainy. You are going just face to face with evil. With just it's like beyond black and white. It's just I've never played anything like it before in my life.
I have to throw it out there for like I know a few of the guys, a few of the Verdict guys. You know, like Dan Mancini's out there, and Dave Johnson, of course, and Adam Arsenault. All of you guys, anybody who owns a PlayStation 3, who's over the age of 25 and has the maturity of someone over the age of 25,
is it up for 360?
It is, yeah. It is. Okay. I'll extend that. I'll blanket it because console favoritism should have nothing to do with this game.
No.
If you own a 360 or a PlayStation 3, you're over the age of 25. You have the maturity of someone who's over the age of 25, and you know your way around a video game controller. You need to own this game. You absolutely must have this game in your collection.
Yeah, I remember.
That sound fair to you?
Yeah, I said last podcast that Mortal Kombat was my front runner for game of the year. Mortal Kombat just got fatalitied.
Yeah.
Mortal Kombat just got shot.
L.A. Noire just did a 5-hit X-ray combo and then fatalitied Mortal Kombat.
Yeah. I'm just like, wow.
And there's still so much more to year to go.
Yeah. And, dude, I'm going like, wow, and I'm probably 3 hours into it.
I never had time. Like, when I first picked it up, I got it on launch date, and I didn't really have a whole lot of time with it. I might have played probably 45 minutes or an hour of it.
Yeah.
But last night I sat down and plugged about 4 hours in, and, man, it's one of those games that you always want to see how they're going to handle the next case because everything is just so unpredictable. And another caveat, a warning I guess I should throw out. If you're one of these gamers like myself who always strives for the perfect game, you know, you really want 100%, you really want to do every mission to the best of your abilities, let it go.
Yeah, you have to let it go.
The game will make you weep because, you know, I restarted one case twice last night and the aforementioned case about the young girl. And I'm questioning this girl in hospital, and I keep bombing on the interrogation questions. And like, I was getting 1 out of 4 and 2 out of 4. And after the 3 out of 4 attempt, I just had to let it go. I had to keep going. You know, and it's one of those things you really need to keep track of what you're doing. You really need to crack open your notebook every now and again. You get a little in-game notebook that keeps everything nice and neat and tidy and organized for you on a case. And you do, you know, you really do have to pick it up and flip through it every now and again just to keep yourself organized.
Because Detective Phelps is a pretty organized fella.
Detective Phelps is borderline OCD, I think.
Yeah.
And, like, talking to Ken, a co-worker from one of our sister stores, he's a little further in it than I am, and he says, man, like, if you think it's bad now, it gets really confusing.
Yeah.
And there are times when you will convict the wrong man or feel like you convicted the wrong man, and, you know, it leaves that empty feeling in the pit of your stomach that I'm sure that real law enforcement guys must face on a daily basis, you know? And just for a game to give you that feeling, that's pretty goddamn astounding. That's pretty amazing.
Especially when you come across, you know, like, there are characters in the game, people in the police force who care more about just an arrest being made.
Yeah, you know, just bringing somebody in.
Rather than true justice being served.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's pretty amazing. It's a pretty amazing feeling, man, playing the game and like finishing a case and stuff like that. It is really, you know, I put it the same way as Demon's Souls. It's not an easy game, but it's hard for entirely different reasons.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's no real way to fail L.A. Noire.
No.
You know,
no.
You fuck up an interrogation. You fuck up a little bit of the case. You've got to. It just becomes that much more challenging to.
Yeah, and then when you finish it, you get that same feeling of entitlement, man. You get that same, you know, that, like, yeah, you know, like, I did it.
Yeah.
You know, it is an astounding piece of work.
I mean, we were all making the jokes before it came out how, you know, we were going to, our interrogations were going to be the Bud White style.
Yeah, we're just going to come in with a phone book.
And truly, you know, the game deserves a bit better than that.
It does. Yeah. It really does.
Yeah. That being said, I do wish you could bring in a phone book.
Wouldn't it be neat?
Yeah.
Score, John, L.A. Noire.
Oh, 5 out of 5. Definitely 5 out of 5.
Yeah, if I'm going 5 out of 5 or 10 out of 10, you know, either or. Yeah, 100%. Full ranking all around.
Yeah. This one will be retired with full military honor.
Exactly. 21 gun salute.
Yeah, in the Army of Awesome.
Mm-hmm. Anything else you've been playing?
No, just L.A. Noire.
Just L.A. Noire.
Yeah, I had picked up a PSP RPG, but I brought it back and picked up L.A. Noire instead.
Oh, really? What one was it?
Oh, jeez, I can't even remember anymore. I blind bought it, and I forgot L.A. Noire was coming out. it had some really weird name that began with a J and then was called The Timeless Land. It was, you know, some sort of random generated dungeon 2D kind of ease type knockoff.
Oh, okay, very good.
You know, I took a look at the reviews online. It was getting like 5s and 6s out of 10. And I mean, you know, you like, there's a lot of times you can't really trust a lot of the reviews online.
When it comes to
as the system starts to show its age, people tend to get a little more cantankerous.
Yeah, and I said it earlier tonight, and I really mean it, man. Online journalism, online reviews in general have become like the Wild West.
Yeah.
You know, it's just become chaotic at best.
Yeah. Well, I looked at the reviews for it, and then, you know, I saw people on Facebook talking about L.A. Noire, and I was just like, God damn it, I forgot about it.
Even, you know, even at one time, and as sad as it sounds, I used to often rely on the forums at GameFAQs.
Yeah.
Because you could go on and, like, generally speaking, if someone was posting on the forums, they had an interest in this particular game. You know, like, if you were looking for information on, say, I don't know, just, okay, Oblivion. You know, like, say you wanted to play some Oblivion. You go into the Oblivion forums, and all of these guys were Morrowind veterans. All of these guys were comparing the game to Morrowind. And, of course, the hardest people in the world to please are people who really enjoy the previous game in a series.
Yes.
You know, when people became so gravitated towards Morrowind, these guys, when Oblivion shipped, these were the hardest guys to please.
Yeah.
You know? And you used to be able to go in and get an indication of how good or bad a game is by how the fans responded to it. Now you go into GameFAQs, and all it is, which system is this better on? Should I buy this or this? You know? Like, and that's all the entire board is anymore.
Yeah.
So even that's become like the Wild West, you know? It doesn't seem like there's really a safe haven anymore. Even BioWare's forums have gone to absolute dog shit.
Dude, I go on forum boards, go on to internet gaming sites and everything. I feel like Carlito from Carlito's Way. You know, you've gone back. It's old-timers day in the barrio. And you, I'm walking down the street, and there's all these punk kids and everything. All the kids who were like, when I used to work at EB Games, were 10 and 12, are now like, you know, they're teenagers now.
Yeah.
And they got a voice.
Yeah, and all they play is Call of Duty.
And all they play is Call of Duty, and everyone's screaming out, it wants to be heard. And, you know, I just feel like huddling in a corner or climbing into a bathroom stall and pretending I have a gun.
I mean, you know, even the First Templar, I go onto the First Templar forums just on the off chance that maybe where it's a smaller key game, it might have attracted a bit more of a normal follow. You remember when you used to be able to get game hints on GameFAQs? Remember when you go to GameFAQs and all it was threads like, how do I find this or how do I do this?
Oh,
or
it was actual facts.
Well, not even so much that it was actual facts, but, you know, the boards were used for kind of, like, advice and stuff, you know, like...
Yeah. Can't beat death in Lament of Innocence.
Yeah, you know, or, you know, cannot find magic goggles to start the reverse castle of Symphony of the Night. Where do I find them? You know, and, like,
better double jump, player.
Yeah, everybody generally had more of a sense of camaraderie and stuff. You know, gamers kind of stuck together. Now it's just become, you know...
I blame 4chan.
I don't know what I blame. I don't know what can be blamed.
No.
But, you know, I go there now, and, of course, I go into the Last Templar forums, and on the front page alone, there's like 10 threads. Is this game any good? Is this game any good? Is this game any good?
Do the boards even have moderators anymore?
I don't think they do. I really don't. And, you know, on top of that, there's a search function.
Wyatt Earp's already got his guilty conscience. Now he just wants the money.
Yeah, and of course, and beyond that, okay, the last thing you want to do is walk into a forum dedicated to a particular game and ask the fans who are hanging out there, is the game any good?
Noob. Or sorry, knob now, isn't it?
No, I don't know. I don't know. Knob.
Knob. We did it for, we did it for the lulz.
So yeah, L.A. Noire, 10 out of 10, 5 out of 5, 100 out of 100, 5 stars, 2 thumbs up.
Shit, goddamn, I'm the man, amazing. Go buy it.
Yeah, exactly.
It is the Midnight Creeper.
So, as I was saying earlier, you know, when I heard a year and a half or 2 years ago that Rockstar, of all people, was going to be making a detective simulator set in 1940s Los Angeles, I kind of went, whatever, you know, like, okay, they've lost their freaking minds. What setting, what era, what time and place do you think would actually make for some damn interesting video game playing?
Dude, I say this all the time, and I keep waiting for a developer to eventually get the sack to do it. I really, really want some sort of game steeped in the whole mythology and culture of the 80s action movie.
So like Dead to Rights?
No, no, I want something better than Dead to Rights. You remember a few episodes ago when I was talking about they should the makers of Army of Two should make Lethal Weapon? It doesn't. You could even make a game like L.A. Noire, you know. I just want something steeped in that mythology.
Okay, so
I've been watching Cobra all week, and I've been drinking green tea all night, and I'm freaking pumped.
Okay, going beyond that, going beyond fictional genre, I'm thinking more like era, time period, kind of loosely based on reality. Action 80s action movies are just not reality whatsoever. Like I said, the first time you heard 1940s detective story in Los Angeles and said, what? What era would you actually think would make for interesting video game play?
Late 60s. Late 1960s. Kind of whole, the whole Zodiac Killer style vibe.
Okay.
When you're coming to the end of Free Love.
The downfall of the hippie generation.
Yeah, and you're coming to the end of Feel Good America.
The cold hard reality of death settling in.
Exactly. Just when shit got real.
So would it be another L.A. Noire style detective thriller, or would it be more Alan Wake or Heavy Rain type of?
Dude, I'd be happy with either of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, but your detective would have to have a shoulder holster.
Shoulder holster?
Yeah, just like the guy investigating the Zodiac Killer. Dave, whatever. Dirty Harry.
Mark Ruffalo.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure Bullet Carry is gone like that, too.
Probably. I'm sticking, mystery theme, same deal.
Yeah.
Turn of the century England.
Oh!
Late 1800s England. Oh. Beginning of the Industrial Revolution,
Get a letter from your pal Jackie.
Yeah, well, not even so much Jack the Ripper, not even necessarily Jack the Ripper, not even, investigating killings, but, just general unrest.
Myself and Woolridge a few weeks ago were talking about, when we were talking about Assassin's Creed Revelations.
Yeah.
We were saying the next time they jump ahead in Assassin's Creed, I said, everyone, of course, is going to say, do, World War II or something like that.
Yeah.
We both said it would be awesome to do the end of the 19th century in London.
Yeah.
Right? In that just the whole grimy.
The whole, the end of the Renaissance, beginning of the industrial era,
Yeah, you've got, set in that dirty Arthur Conan Doyle world.
Gritty, smoky London.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah, that would be cool.
And then Kevin even spoke up and he said, Jack the Ripper was probably a Templar.
There you go.
Yeah, he wasn't Hashashin.
There you go. But, you could even do something what people fail to remember, there was a shitload of civil unrest going on at that time. There was a lot of religious stuff, a lot of religious mumbo-jumbo going on,
Yeah.
There were a lot of apocalypse, end-of-the-world scenarios.
Was a lot of people, too. A lot of people were just starting to become enlightened, and that power was corrupting them, and they were starting to take advantage of the less enlightened.
Yeah, medicine was starting to become a science and not a trade.
Yeah.
Things like this. The Industrial Revolution was kicking it in high gear. Religion was kind of fighting against the industrialized world.
Doctors were eventually starting to say the only time you use a bleeding is when you want to kill someone.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. You could do something really cool with that setting, I think.
Yeah.
You really do something awesome with that.
You've been watching Burke and Hare again, haven't you?
I have not, actually.
No?
I really haven't. And so much stuff has been kind of, I guess, a lot of it, they romanticize, the whole Sherlock Holmes and Jack the Ripper stuff. But you could go for, there is a lot more interesting shit there that you could play with.
Oh, God, yes.
Wasn't there a war going on at that point? Wasn't the Boer War at full height at that point?
It was.
Wasn't Winston Churchill proving how much of a badass he was at that point?
Well, Winston Churchill was becoming a warrior poet.
Winston
Churchill is one of the Bruja. That explains everything.
I don't know. So yeah, that was my suggestion.
That's pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm.
That's very awesome. Wow, it's late.
Is it really?
It really is, and I got to get up tomorrow at 6:30.
Oh, gross. I do too, actually. Yeah. So, on that note, thanks for tuning in. Thanks for, like, wasting, I don't know, I'm not even sure how long this ran. Maybe an hour, hour and a half of your time?
Yeah, about an hour and a half.
About an hour and a half. There we go. An hour and a half of your time. We hope you had fun. We did. We always do. What else is new? With that, I'll leave you. And, of course, you can tune in next week when you hear...
Oh, no. We're not doing that joke this week.
No?
No, dude. I'm recording this. I don't have the patience for that.
Okay. Well, tune in next week where you'll hear silence. That's it. We're out of here.
You better close your eyes.